Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hello and welcome to this latest episode of the Geek Town Behind the Scenes podcast. I'm your host Dave Elliott, and on this episode I'm chatting with Carl Johnson, composer behind the music for a brand new set of Looney Tunes cartoons which are currently airing on HBO Max in the US. There's no news yet exactly where they may pop up in the UK, but you can go and watch some of them if you go to the HBO Max YouTube channel. Carl is an Emmy-winning composer known for his work on Animaniacs, Gargoyles, Pinky and the Brain, and Piglet's Big Movie, amongst many, many other animated series. He's one of two composers who scored on the Looney Tunes cartoons, which include 80 11-minute episodes made up of animated shorts, each varying in length. In addition to composing, Carl is a highly sought-after orchestrator and has worked on films such as Skyfall, The Amazing Spider-Man, WALL-E, and Finding Dory. In the interview, we discuss how it felt following in the footsteps of the legendary originator of the Looney Tunes sound, Carl Starling, and reworking some of his compositions such as the classic What's Up, Doc. We also chat about how critical the music is in these brilliant animated shorts. As I said, you can go online and watch them, and if you go and look at the post on the website, there will be some embedded in there as well. If you'd like to hear more behind the scenes interviews, don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcast by searching for Geek Town Radio. This will also give you our weekly Geek Town Radio podcast, which brings you all the latest TV, film and gaming news. You can also look at the website at geektown.co.uk for your daily news stories and the latest UK and US TV premiere dates. Here's the interview with Carl. Hi, Carl. How are you doing?
Good. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too. It's lovely to be able to sit down and chat with you virtually.
Thank you. Thank you for taking the time.
You're very welcome. Who doesn't love a Looney Tunes cartoon? I mean, for starters. But also the fact that you worked on Animaniacs, which is just one of my favorite cartoons of all time.
Oh, great.
I adored that show. I'm what, 45 now? So I don't know how old I was when that was out. But I was kind of the right age to sort of get a lot of the older jokes that were weaved into that show.
Yeah, it was that was such a fun show to work on. And, you know, the whole team on it was really kind of pushing the boundaries for what people were thinking daytime animation could be at that time. It was a real treat to be on that team.
Yeah, it's such a brilliantly put together animation, that whole thing. And of course, the Pinky and the Brain spin-offs and, you know, all the other like little segments and stuff that they had on it. It's just wonderful. So why don't we start off with a little bit of background? How did you get into composing in the first place?
Well, I originally was a music theory major in college, and I'd always done music as a hobby, taking piano lessons from a very young age. And I played trombone in the school marching bands and ensembles.
I know that well. I used to play trumpet in my high school band.
Oh, yeah. And it's, you know, it's great fun. And I had always done it because it was fun and it was a hobby, and never taken it very seriously. But when I got into college, I took a few music classes just sort of for fun, and found that I actually could keep up pretty well and enjoyed it, and you know, was able to compete with my classmates. And I ended up changing my major to music theory, of course having no idea what I was going to do with a music theory degree. At one point when I was going to University of Kansas, I got into a marching band at Disneyland, the All-American College Marching Band.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, it was fantastic. I got to spend a whole summer between my junior and senior year working at Disneyland and performing on the park every day.
Nice.
And as part of that job, we also were exposed to different areas of the music or the entertainment industry in general. And at one point, I learned about the film music program at the University of Southern California. Hmm. And it was kind of something that made sense as the next step after a music theory degree, although I had never considered myself a composer. But I was able to get into the program at USC and just found that it was something that I really enjoyed doing. And if I was lucky, I might be able to find some work doing. So, you know, it all kind of fell into place.
Wow. Yeah. And one of the things I have in the notes is that you work with pencil and paper to write your music, which is practically unheard of these days. But what a lost art that is. But why still do it that way? I mean, if it works, I guess it works. So, you know.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting thing. I got my start in the music industry right as the electronics were kind of taking over. Kind of the advent of MIDI and computer audio coincided with the years that I was working on Animaniacs and the stuff in the 90s.
Yeah.
But my training had been very kind of old school, very much studying classical music scores. And I learned to do orchestration by hand. So it was where I came from. But I had always had an interest in electronically produced music as well. So yeah, I kind of had a foot in both worlds. And as time has gone on, it would certainly be easy enough for me to work by just playing directly into a computer. But there's a part of my brain that has learned how to look at things and analyze them on paper. And I really find when I skip that step of writing it down that I don't like the end result as much. And it really affects my creative process too, that something about the physical action of using a pencil and putting it on paper really helps me kind of think through some of the details that I might not be aware of if I weren't writing it down. And also another added benefit is pencil and paper never crash.
There is that. Yeah.
I don't have to worry about, suddenly my paper losing its ability to be read.
Yeah.
So it's a very durable medium as long as it doesn't catch on fire.
But yes, there is that. But, you at least have photocopiers and stuff now. So
yes, with the advent of scanners, it makes it very easy.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you've worked on various animated things. As you mentioned, Animaniacs. You did some work on Batman, the animated series, which is another amazing show.
Yeah, that was fantastic.
Care Bears, you did a lot of stuff for Care Bears as well, which I'm sure are beloved by quite a lot of people. The Piglet's big movie, Gargoyles, which is a much overlooked series as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, thank you. I've had I've been very blessed to have had a career with lots of twists and turns. Even though much of what I've been doing has been in animation, the world of animation is so wide that it's given me an opportunity to work on a real variety of projects.
Yeah, and as well as the orchestrating stuff which you've been involved with like I noticed Amazing Spider-Man, Skyfall, Finding Dory, the Aladdin movies.
It's been a nice addition to my composition. Orchestration is kind of a vague term because it can mean a lot of things in a lot of different circumstances. Yeah. But ultimately, the orchestrator is the one that's responsible for making sure that the music that gets put in front of the players is readable and appropriate and accurate to the composer's vision. And there's a part of my brain that really appeals to because I grew up playing in marching bands and in ensembles. I have a good feel for what it takes to make something on a piece of paper relatable to a musician who's trying to play it. And I really find that very gratifying to be able to speak to that language. And it could be somebody that doesn't speak my language. language. Somebody in any part of the world, but can still look at this information on a piece of paper and interpret it in precisely the way that I intended. So I really enjoy that. And working with live musicians is one of the greatest joys of what I do.
Yeah, I can imagine. And interestingly, that background of being an orchestrator and a composer for something like Looney Tunes must come in really quite handy, because it's such a specific sort of sound that you're creating and music that you're creating for something like Looney Tunes, because it weaves in and out of old music scores, and then you're putting more stuff on top of that, and you're orchestrating original things as well.
So yeah,
it's this big bag of different stuff.
Yeah, really, animation music, and specifically sort of this classic Carl Stalling Warner Brothers style, is technically very difficult music to write and just as difficult to play. So having kind of an orchestrator hat on really helps, because a lot of times I'm pushing these instruments to the very edge of what's possible. A lot of times that's what makes it funny, is to hear these performers kind of scrambling to do something which is almost inhuman. But but it really helps to know what a player can do. And if you push them 10% beyond that, what you're going to get in return. So it really is an advantageous thing to be able to put on that orchestrator hat every now and then.
Yeah. And with the Looney Tunes stuff, like you say, musically, they have a very specific kind of classic style to them. And what's interesting about this particular batch of Looney Tunes, because they've always made those Looney Tunes cartoons, but there's been three stages where they've tried modernizing them. And this particular batch really isn't that. It feels very much like a classic Looney Tunes stuff.
Yeah.
So for you, how was approaching that?
Well, it was fantastic. When I had my very first meeting with the creative team on this, Pete Browngarten and Alex Kerwin, they said that when they were considering this show and pitching it to Warner Brothers, part of their creative idea was, what if the classic animation division at Warner Brothers had never stopped making Looney Tunes and Merry Melodies? What would it be like if they were still going today? Mm-hmm. And let's take that original sensibility and all of that experience and insight that those people came up with, and let's not throw it out the window by trying to reinvent it, but let's honor what they figured out and figure out how to just do more of it. And to me, that sounded really appealing, because sort of the rules and the guidelines and the formulas that they came up with worked so well that there's really no need to try to fix them. So when they were describing this, I said to the guys, you know, this sounds like a dream gig. It's like, in terms of the story, it's very driven by the animation. It's all about sight gags. There's as little dialogue as possible, all of which makes it sound ideal to a composer.
Yeah, I mean, you've got some really interesting things in there. What's the process for you? I'm assuming you're writing to picture, because it's so heavily ingrained. The score is so ingrained in the music, unlike what you would do with the drama, where it sort of sits behind the action. It's integral to the entire thing, you know, the whole animation. So
the process really is, the visuals are all basically completed before the composer comes on board. The dialogue has all been recorded. The animation has all been done. All of the editing, all of that stuff has been finished. And the very last thing to happen, along with the sound effects, is the music. And so the composer's job is to make sure that the music is perfectly synchronized to the film. And if an action happens on screen, I have to make sure that I hit it to the frame.
Yeah.
So technically, that can be really challenging. And I often spend, when I'm starting a piece of music for a Looney Tunes project, I'll spend hours just figuring out the tempo and the meter and how the heartbeat of the music is going to match the film. And then once I've got all the empty measures laid out, then I'll go back and fill in the notes, which is very backwards from the way most film music is created, where you start with the feel and the tempo is kind of the last thing that you get. But just the technical part of creating the music to fit exactly with the film is sort of half the battle. That whole process, I think, is very rewarding when it's all finished. And for me to see a piece of animation music fit so perfectly with the film that it feels sort of inevitable is a very rewarding thing, especially when there's a joke or something that you're able to support and really help the joke land well.
Yeah, I mean, there are some great examples of that. I mean, there's a couple of these shorts of HBO have posted up on YouTube. So there's things like Wet Cement have been put up on there, which is a great example of that sort of thing, of the music. You know, it's Daffy and Elmer, isn't it? And Elmer's kind of laying out Wet Cement thing and Daffy keeps on walking through it.
Yeah.
That's a great example of the music sort of having to hit particular marks every time, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. The synchronicity has to be absolutely exact. And an interesting thing about that short is there's no dialogue in it. So the storytelling really has to come from the music. And as a composer, that's at once frightening, but also a tremendous opportunity to not just sort of get dialed back and put in the background, that the music is very much in the forefront. And if there's a joke that's waiting to be fully developed, sometimes the music can just sort of help it along. So it really lands well.
Yeah, definitely. And they put a little clip up of Dynamite Dance as well, which is I want to see the whole episode of that, because there's only like a little section of it that they put on the YouTube video, but that's a Bugs and Elmer one. And is it Puccellini's Dance of the Hours that is it using in the
right?
So yeah. Presumably they had a version of that they were scoring to, and then you came in and had to do a sort of rearrangement and set that.
Yeah, that was kind of an interesting process. They found a recording of the piece of music done by I'm not sure where it came from, but it was a classical music recording, meaning that it was not done to a metronome, that it was the composer or the conductor conducting it as the music sort of felt natural. Right. But when you go in and analyze those things, there's all kinds of little subtle tempo changes. And what they had done was taken this recording and time compressed it, so it was like 10% faster than the original recording, but also had all of those little subtle time changes in it. So what I had to do was come back after the fact and then beat for beat match that new tempo with all of those little subtle time changes, and then arrange it for the orchestra that we had and try to make something that was barely playable to begin with 10% faster and even more difficult. So it was an opportunity to really rely on the amazing studio musicians that play on these things. And interestingly enough, the musicians have a great time doing this stuff. It's
I'm sure.
A lot of the stuff that they get called on to do is, they say it's 90% boredom and 10% terror. yeah. And it ends up being a lot of the same thing over and over again. But when they get called in to do an animation music session, they really get to stretch and do some stuff that they don't normally get to do. And they often have a really good time doing it. So it's fun to sort of push them to the limits, but in such a way that it's not that 10% terror.
Yeah, no, I can imagine they must have a whale of a time doing this stuff. It's got to be such a break from like the 10th horror movie that they've done that year or whatever.
Yeah, and hopefully that comes across in the music too, that you can tell when the players are having fun.
Yeah, one of the other pieces, which there's one called Snow Laughing Matter as well, which I'm guessing is a Christmas-based one. But yeah. That's quite interesting, because that mixes in and out of things like O Tannenbaum and In the Bleak Wee Winter, and then mixes into like directly into the track and then back out into something else. Just amazingly well-crafted bit of work. Is that sort of quite difficult to do, making that sort of transition?
Well, that's kind of it's sort of the object of the game, is to figure out how many little pieces of quotations of things you can weave into the music. And I guess it's something that I do to amuse myself, and if somebody else gets it, it's that much better. But it's also fun to try to work in some classical music themes that maybe have not been used in animation before. There's a kind of a chase scene in that using the Mozart Requiem. and it's not often to see a big flaming pickup truck chasing somebody to the tune of Mozart Mozart's Requiem. So it's kind of a chance to stretch a little bit. But yeah, that episode is going to be part of a Christmas special that'll come out later in the year. And part of the fun of working on these things is being able to work in tunes in sort of unpredictable ways, and maybe ways that you don't recognize what it is right away. But if you think back on it, it's like, oh, I get why that tune was being used there.
It's sort of like classical music sampling in the same way that you know, people do on pop records these days. You know, it's essentially it's that.
Yeah, it's kind of juxtaposing something that was in one situation into something completely different and seeing what kind of new work it comes up with.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm sort of a cartoon music DJ.
Yes. The other thing, of course, you got hold of to do this are the Merrily We Roll Along and What's Up Doc, which are the kind of theme tune bits that people would know as the Looney Tunes theme, I guess.
Right.
So how is it just getting your hold of that and being able to rearrange those?
That was a real honor. It was one of the first things I did on the project, and being able to go back and listen to the original versions of those songs, and the creative direction I got was take the original and then take it where you want. And my idea was to really kind of honor the original approach and sort of polish it up and make a really nice recording and add a few more things. But you know, you kind of realize that you're working with sacred material and you want to make sure that you do it right and do it in the best way, most presentable way possible. I'm really pleased with how it turned out. I think, you know, for my little contribution to the history of Looney Tunes, I'm glad to have had the opportunity to arrange those pieces of music so that the next generation of viewers will enjoy it.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you have a favorite character to write for particularly?
I'd have to say it's the Roadrunner Coyote cartoons that I find are the most rewarding. Technically, they're very difficult. For one thing, there's no dialogue.
Yeah.
And so the music really has to be the storyteller and give you the insight into what's going on into Coyote's brain. And I think I really identify with Wile E. Coyote just because no matter how hard he plans things out, they always fall apart. So I know how that feels.
Yeah, yeah. There is a little animated short of that. The Tunnel Vision, I don't know whether it's the whole thing, but there's Tunnel Vision. They have actually put up online as well, which is classic bit of work between the pair of them. And it's got the classic kind of painting an entrance on a rock thing, which I love. I was always a fan of those cartoons, the Roadrunner ones.
Yeah, and one interesting thing that this new Looney Tunes cartoons series is doing is that the directors and the creative team are able to kind of just nudge things a little bit further into the crazy approaches to things, that they're able to take a joke just a little farther than the traditional Looney Tunes guys would have been able to do, like walking into the rock.
Yeah.
You know, it really works, but it's a little bit of a push to make that joke land. And I guess they're able to make it a little bit more surreal than you would expect. And I think it really comes across.
Yeah. Yeah. I spotted that in that one. I noticed that was kind of an interesting additional kind of twist to it. I thought that was really lovely. So I'm going to let you go, but a couple of last questions for you. They're always the same. We always ask everybody the same ones. So first one is, what TV shows are you watching at the moment?
You know, that's tricky. Most people that are actively working in the entertainment industry don't have time to watch TV.
That is true. Yes.
That being said, I just started watching Westworld and I'm about 5 episodes into it and I can't wait to find time to watch the rest of it. But I'm really enjoying it. I'm a real science fiction geek, and I'm loving the approach to this story.
It's wonderful. I love how it like morphs into different things every season as well. It's a really, really good show.
I'm looking forward to that.
And lastly, if you had the opportunity to work on any TV show, it can be something from the past, something present, or some future genre, what would it be? And it can't be something you've previously worked on.
You know, I would love to work on something in the Star Wars universe. One of the the very first pieces of film music that ever attracted my attention was the score to Star Wars. And John Williams is a huge hero of mine. So I would love to work on some kind of Star Wars project someday.
Well, I mean, I'm sure Disney will get around to making something again. I mean, they're going to carry on with that license for as long as humanly possible, I think. So,
it'll be around for a while. Yeah.
So hopefully something comes your way at some point. It's been lovely chatting with you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Dave. I appreciate you taking the time.
It's been lovely chatting with you. Hopefully talk again at some point in the future.
I look forward to it.
All right. Cheers. See you. Bye.
All right. Thank you, Dave. Take care. Bye.